Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Angela.
This is Books,
Books Are
Good, actually. And this podcast that is now being published in April is for Less Than Nothing by Žižek. We're on part three, which
part
is what
three.
we read from March. And boy, howdy, it was a tough one. It felt like, you know, in Elden Ring, for the first half of the boss fight, you're like, okay, I got it. You know, you died a couple times. And then there's a second part, and you're like, oh my god, everything's getting faster and making no fucking sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you can mark Elden Ring reference one on your score sheet, because it's going to be a lot. If you're playing a drinking game, be prepared.
If you're playing Elden Ring, cool.
Cool. I'm glad for you. I hope you're having a grand time.
Yeah. Good on you for multitasking. I do it too. I listen to podcasts and play Elden Ring.
Anyway, so this is going to start off a shaky ground, because as our previous parts, we've kind of tried to connect the contemporary media to parts of this book. And
contemporary. Some of our listeners may take issue with that.
Oh, my God. Modern?
Contemporary for us, because we watched a movie related to it recently.
This is true. Okay, well, whatever. I don't know.
The 40-year anniversary for this film.
Chill. Okay, don't talk about how old this movie is, which is called Terminator 1, one of the best movies ever, and unfortunately saddled with weird sequels. And
second sequel was good.
Yeah, second sequel is good. As I said, when we watched the second sequel, Sarah Connor Chronicles is an amazing fucking TV series that cut short by fucking Fox.
Mm-hmm. As they do.
Okay, so what the fuck does Terminator has to do with the book we're reading? So, and I believe it was chapter, not 10, or 11. 11 is the good chapter, we both decided.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, there were other good moments in other chapters, but chapter 11 was the chapter where it's like, we're banging on all cylinders.
Yeah.
For most of it. There's a couple parts where it's like, playing around with pundit squares of what is the real versus what is not real, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's split the masculine-feminine dichotomy vertically. No, let's split it horizontally.
So interlude, I think it's interlude 5, it's either 5 or 4, 4 or 5, whatever. There was a story about this prisoner and his letter about the USSR, like living, like USSR is going to live forever, maybe?
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah, so he was absolutely, like, not just a political prisoner, but had been a part of, like, the revolutionary beginnings of the USSR.
And right.
As a lot of people who were a part of the revolutionary beginnings of the USSR, challenges to Stalin were kind of detrimental.
Right. So he wrote a letter to his wife and says, you know, by the time I die, USSR will live forever, or it will continue on. And of course that by the time she got it, the USSR was
and dissolved.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she got the letter in, like, 1992, 91. Yeah.
So, it's, I think the whole poem is, like, the letter will get there.
Arrives at the appropriate time.
At the appropriate time, right. So, in Terminator 1, we have Reese, who goes back in time to protect Sarah Connor, and falls in love with the picture. And I guess, you know, the adrenaline of running from a fucking killer robot. And they bang, and thus John Connor is born. So the whole and then Reese unfortunately dies, which kind of always blows, but you know, it is what it is.
I mean, isn't it so Freudian for your father to die as part of your conception?
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah. There was a lot of talk of castration this section, like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot.
And
so, whole point is that a letter arrives. Or John Connor arrives at the appropriate time, thanks to Reese. Maybe. I don't know. This was great in my head, like, a week ago, and now it's just mumbled mush from reading this chapter. or yeah, part.
It's fine. Anyone who's going to continue listening is already going to continue listening.
Fair.
They received the listening from the future, which prompted them to listen now.
There we go. We're learning bits and pieces from this book every time we read it.
I learned that from Terminator.
Okay. Terminator or Less Than Nothing. Either way.
Oh my god. That would be a book title. You know, Less Than Terminator. Zizek could write that. I guarantee you.
Oh yeah, for sure.
He fucking loves movies. God damn.
He really does. Holy I just shit. Enjoy some of his, like, here's a Wikipedia section of Super 8, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It's like, okay, is it Hitchcock, or is it Super 8, or is it, like, some Woody Allen film, or is it, I don't know. He drops so many, like, obscure film references, especially in this part.
Like, yeah, for sure.
Cool. This movie about the red German shoes? Okay. Kind of following. I forget now what it was about, but something about shoes.
Oh, the red shoes and how it, was it like the desire of the man? Yeah, had
something to do with a dancer?
Yeah. It was kind of like Black Swan, but not really Black Swan.
Yeah. So you can tell listeners, this is going to be a fruitful discussion.
Yeah. Which also, speaking of Black Swan, is it also like Perfect Blue? Is it not like Perfect Blue?
I mean, Perfect Blue is,
I mean, it is, Perfect Blue kind of turns it a little bit, because generally I think Black Swan and Red Shoes kind of, not really, it focused on the relationship of the male characters to the female characters. And Perfect Blue was actually more of a jealousy between, well, Black Swan also had that jealousy between the two, you know, dancers or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like the male characters were, like, just as important. And then Perfect Blue had, you know, the creepy-ass fan. But it was really the man, spoilers for Perfect Blue, which came out 20 years ago, so I'm sorry, was more focused on the manager, and the manager wanting to keep the actress or her client a star, an idol than an actress, because
she was afraid for her to be sexualized,
and she wanted her to be this perfect idol, which is a condemnation of idol culture in Japan and also in Korea to an extent, since they cannot have relationships, or when they move off to, you know, they graduate and become actors or actresses, they kind of, like, graduation is kind of like, okay, that's the end of that, and I can move on to doing, you know, other shit, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I kind of wonder if Zizek has seen Perfect Blue and what he would say about it.
I think he probably hasn't. I feel like he would enjoy it. He would probably definitely obviously see the parallels between Red Shoes, Black Swan, and that movie.
Yeah. Now the next question, and this is an important question. It's not on the list, but would Zizek be a weeb?
I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's reason why I don't think he would be because he would think a lot of shit would be just derivative shit. Like, just not good. And there's only so much, like, anime comes out that viewers are like, it's really, really good. Manga is a little bit easier to find something that's, like, decent.
Yep. Okay. Okay. I accept this. Okay. So that letter arrived. And now what do we do with this letter? Do we talk about our feelings about this letter?
Yes. Let's talk about the feelings of this letter.
This letter, of course, being Part three.
Part three. I guess I'll start.
Yeah.
I'll start. Okay. So let me tell you. So as I explained earlier about Elden Ring bosses, I was very used to, like, the pattern of how he explained stuff. And then he brought in Lacan, and I'm just like, okay, what the fuck? Like, how does this, how do we go through Hegel to discuss Lacan to, like resolve Hegel. It's such a weird like shift, and I just don't get it. And I know part of that is from never reading Lacan, not really getting into psychoanalyze or analyst type shit. You know, there's a whole masculine and feminine, and I'm like, okay, but I know that's the framework that which everyone kind of worked in. And then
yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah. And then like... Zizek did kind of push back on that, I believe, by saying it's really interesting, how for, especially for sexuality, to kind of put humans into like as try to divide them up as like species or like try mm-hmm. to make that comparison when it makes like really no sense. And then yeah,
because it's one genus, it's not two genuses,
right? And then because humans have been very fluid, trying to put a rigid sexuality like spectrum because that's actually more fluid, but just kind of like these homosexual, heterosexual, okay, we're done, right? Like,
yeah.
Trying to apply those paradigms onto everybody just also makes no sense. And he kind of touches on gender a little bit, but he kind of backs off. He just kind of mentions Judith Butler and then kind of was like, all right, she explains this a bit more better than that. And then
moves on.
Yeah, then kind of moves on.
That section, like, I had heard, like, things about, like, complaints about Zizek regarding his stance on, like, gender. And I was like, this is kind of reaffirming that he's okay.
Yeah, he definitely kind of just says gender is very fluid, so is sexuality. It's really not good to try to, like, it's really interesting how... as you know, psychoanalysts and you know all that other shit, we really try to apply like this masculine and feminine thing when it makes like absolutely no fucking sense. Mm-hmm. And then the last chapter 11, which we kind of alluded to, was kind of the more kind of back to what I'm used to reading from him, was pretty interesting. It covered several topics, I felt like. Mm-hmm. The last section about 1+1+A. And how the difference between conservatives and the like the my enemy of my enemy is my friend, and how conservatives are kind of like okay with that. Yeah. However, leftists are really not. It's just like no, I don't. The enemy of me, we can't do that because like you know, for instance, Hezbollah. It's really not a good idea to support Hezbollah because, and like, yeah, so they want to get rid of, you know,
imperialism, the Israel,
imperialism. However, they also want to subjugate women and you know, minorities. Other folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, yeah, that's true. And that's, and this is actually a really good argument against like, I don't want to say tankies. I want to say, just say Russian fanboys, the
critical support.
Yeah.
There are issues with critical support.
Right. And he kind of lays it out here, like that 1+1+A, right? Because mm-hmm. like people want to ignore A, and it's like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
You cannot.
A is the part that makes the struggle exist. If it was just 1+1=2, then we would have an equal balance.
Right.
It is the A that is being fought over that creates the struggle between the 1+1.
Yeah, because I think he mentions like, oh, when people criticize Marx, they're like, oh, you know, it's just the proletariat. I always gonna fuck up these words. Anyway, the bourgeoisie, wow.
The bourgeoisie.
The bourgeois versus the prots, and we're done. Like, and that's really, really reductionist, because mm-hmm. it's not. There's several, it's the A. There's so many other, also... Right, it's the A. There are mm-hmm. stratifications of different classes. There's mm-hmm. the racial aspect. There's so many things about it.
Great example is like the Indian caste system, which does come up at one point. He talks about the untouchables. The untouchables are the A in this case, because like they're not considered in Indian caste society. They're not considered to be like a part of the proletariat, but they are still there and they're still working and they're doing critical things for society, but they're not recognized for it or rewarded for it. And they're the offshoot of that struggle, that definition between the master caste and the subservient caste.
Right. So I felt like everything up until chapter 11 was, that just went over my head. And
it was a struggle session.
It was definitely a struggle session. I felt like chapter 11 was a bit better. There was still, you know, some sections, it was just kind of a mishmash, but I think he was trying to draw an ending conclusion of everything, of like sexuality, of gender, of, you know, the class struggle, and how things kind of like, I think my favorite part is the like, how some people want to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. They just want to keep the baby, but throw out the dirty bathwater. But they know we need to throw out everything, you know?
Yeah. Like, so, you throw out the dirty bathwater. Guess what the baby's still coated in?
Yeah.
And if you throw in clean bathwater on that baby immediately afterward, you know what you now have?
A dirty bathwater.
Dirty bathwater.
So with a dirty baby.
Yep.
So, yeah, this was a tough section. I'm kind of looking forward to the part four. Granted, it's shorter, but I'm kind of curious.
What? The haha, it's shorter? It's still 400 pages.
No, it's 200-ish. Unless the conclusion's like a fucking 200 pages, then
the
shit.
The conclusion's 76 pages.
Okay.
So I have
maybe 80, I can't count.
84 pages, and then 70 pages, so 154, and then 89 pages, so 263, and then conclusion was 76.
Okay, so
it's like, 300 plus, easy. Okay. We're getting close to 4.
Okay, so it's slightly shorter-ish, actually maybe about the same, but it might be, I'm hoping because it's the last section or whatever, might be a little bit more, not concise.
Spoilers, he talks about quantum mechanics a lot.
Boy, that was a section that one article mentioned that he really did not like, but I mean, he didn't like Zizek in the first place, but he was just like, the quantum mechanics part is really fucking annoying, and it just is completely wrong and blah, blah, blah. So we'll see how this goes when I read it.
Yes.
I might just fucking skim it.
But also, like, everyone's complaints about Zizek in other parts that we have read, I'm like, that doesn't really feel like a legitimate complaint. I feel like you're, as much as I didn't understand it, I also didn't understand their complaints with it. So, like, part of me is like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be as, like, I don't think he's going to misunderstand quantum mechanics as much as that person says that he misunderstands quantum mechanics, in the sense of, like, he's already stated that, like, no one really understands quantum mechanics.
Yeah.
So, if he approaches it from that point, then no matter what he says, he's fine.
Yeah. I guess we'll see when we get there. And also, I guess my last point about part three, I really didn't get a sense of what Jimmy was kind enough to give me links, and I did not read them, so.
Good news, I didn't either.
Okay, well, I didn't know what Lacan was when, like, really, while reading this or trying to get a sense of what his thing was. Part three really didn't also help with that. I was hoping, because how he interviewed other, you know, philosophers and, you know, psychoanalysts, that I would kind of get a sense of what that is, like, what they're about. And I didn't really get that. And perhaps just maybe he did interlace Lacan's work very well, and I just could not pick those pieces out because I just never read Lacan. The only thing I got really from Lacan was just the 1+1+A, because that just made sense to me. And that was it. And the examples that he used to kind of, like, illustrate that.
Yeah. I definitely feel like if we were familiar with Lacan, we would get a lot more out of this, for sure. Absolutely. I also definitely feel like he does talk about Lacan a lot. Like, going into the section, I guess we'll swing over to my feelings now.
Mm-hmm.
Going into this section, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm ready. Let's talk about Hegel through the lens of Lacan. And then it was like, let's talk about Lacan. Sprinkling of mentioning Hegel. Let's talk about Lacan. Sprinkling of mentioning Hegel. It's like, so this is just Lacan? Like, that's fine. I just didn't have the framework to expect or like understand that. Like, I've got somewhat of a grip of Hegel from like listening to other people talk about Hegel, but you can't just be like, yeah, we're gonna go and look at Hegel through the lens of Lacan and then be like, all Lacan all the time, baby. Just constantly Lacan. Yeah, you want to talk about your castrated father? Mm-hmm. You want to talk about the eternal mother? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We're deep into it. Just pundit squares about the non-all. Pundit squares about your castrated penis. Mm. Like, where's Hegel?
Yeah, it was very, not a whole lot of Hegel, a lot of Lacan, a lot of, yeah, castration, moms,
yep.
Non-all moms.
Yep. The unmoms.
Yeah.
But even in spite of that, like, and in spite of it being really jargon heavy and really French heavy, which like was an occasional thing in the Hegel section when he would talk about Lacan or relate something to Lacan, there's so many times where I'm like, okay, this page has like 10 different sentences where part of the sentence is just in French. And then I'm supposed to infer what that French means from the words around it. But I don't quite understand the context of the words around the French. So I guess I'm physically reading these words. Okay, moving on. Next page.
Exactly. For
about like 400 pages. Though he does take... So basically, that's my feelings. My other feelings are, one of my favorite animes of all time, and I guarantee as soon as I say the name, you're going to be like, yeah, of course that is The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya.
Yep.
The watch order is not the order in time. And I wish this book had the read order that was like suggested along with it. It's like, okay, yeah, you can read this chapter 1 through chapter 20, but you should read it in this order, because I feel like some of these chapters and some of the play between like, let's talk about Hegel, and then like 10 chapters later, it's like, so can we actualize Hegel's blah through Lacan? Can we defend it through Lacan and then talk about Lacan for blah? Like, if this book was given to you in the order that it's given in, but then there was a suggestion of like, okay, read chapter 2 and then read chapter 14, read chapter 3 and then read chapter 11 and then read chapter 4 and then read chapter 15. Like, I feel it could be a better book, or more, it could tie Hegel and Lacan better if all of the discussion of Hegel didn't come all at once, and then the reimagining of that Hegel through Lacan happening all at once.
Yeah, that's probably, like, there probably are bits and pieces, like, as you mentioned, there's this some Hegel, and maybe, you know what, maybe Hegel's is throughout the entire chapter, and we just didn't really recognize
it. Yeah, so he definitely, like, will, like, he'll discuss something about Lacan for a while and then like throw in like a couple sentences of like, can we reimagine Hegel's blah through Lacan's blah blah, and then continue on with his defense of why we can or cannot, but without being like a master's or PhD student in philosophy studying Hegel, like that gets lost. Like, I'm not referencing my notes from 1,000 pages ago because I didn't like take detailed notes on like the definitions of these things and my understanding of them. I took notes on what stanzas stood out to me and what felt impactful. And
right.
That's that. I understand this is basically an academic book. This isn't a pop sci book. This isn't a pop psychology book.
Yeah.
However, it would be great even if he was like, even if he had just been like, can we reimagine Hegel's blah through Lacan's blah blah, see pages blah through blah, chapter blah.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty nice. I guess also, yeah, as you said, like, this is definitely more an academic book, and I guess Žižek would kind of be like, scoff at us, like, well, I have other books that are a little bit less academic, right? But like, I like reading stuff that is what to the author thinks is like their masterpiece, you know,
yeah.
Like this is my entire life work of Lacan and Hegel. And like, I'm going to put it all in this one book. And yeah, it's dense, but this is like, to me, my best work. And I would prefer to read that than like his other works, you know?
Yes. But it does not mean that that work is not without critique.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And we could absolutely make this work better.
Yeah.
I think another part that probably made both part two, but definitely part three harder to read is I was not reading the footnotes.
Oh yeah, neither was I, unfortunately. I kind of like clicked on one. I was like, oh, god damn it.
Yeah. And if I was better about this, if Elden Ring didn't drop in February, if someone didn't get me addicted to Dark Souls 3, No blame. It's amazing. Thank you so much. Maybe I would have allotted another hour of my day for reading so that I could read all of the footnotes. But as is, I was giving myself like an hour or so a day to read, and whatever I got through roughly in that hour. Sometimes it was like, yeah, I'm going to try and finish this whole like subsection from like this page to this page. It'd be like, okay, 15 pages. I'll be like, hour and 45 minutes. Let's go. But sometimes those 15 pages went by in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, those were my major complaints, is both this book should be read out of order or should have like appropriate like return references so you can brush up on the idea that he's going to then discuss through another lens, or we should have read this after like participating in a master's program,
which we are both totally not going to do anytime in the future. So
I actually have the paperwork here for both of us.
Oh,
applying now.
Oh, thank you so much for just doing it for me and yes. Without me knowing. Okay, awesome.
I took out some loans in your name as well.
Oh, shit.
So I feel like we kind of also talked about how we feel about this and what our difficulties were.
For sure.
So Lacan, though?
I kind of mentioned Lacan. Just I did not get a sense of what, besides like the very end, of kind of what Lacan was trying to do. And I guess maybe it was some of the masculine, feminine types. Stuff, but I still wasn't super like sussing out what he's trying to say. Yeah, I don't know. I know there's some, I kind of like glanced at one of the Lacan articles about the unconscious is like some type of language. Oh, right. There was stuff about language in there about how we present or how we say things and like what do we truly mean by them. But I kind of was like, okay, and then kept reading. I could not get a sense of what Lacan was about.
Sure. My takeaway from this regarding Lacan was that he was trying to formalize and rigorize Freud. And based on how Žižek presents it, I can definitely see that he was somewhat successful. But yeah, I don't know. Like it's... Yeah, learning about Lacan this way is like playing a game of telephone in which the person giving you the phrase that you're supposed to learn is telling it to you in the form of a limerick, and you're supposed to guess the phrase based off of the joke that is hidden in the limerick.
Okay, yeah, for sure. I'm hoping part four maybe will illuminate us a bit more about Lacan, and maybe we can kind of get a sense of a bit more of a sense of what Hegel and Lacan, like, what is Žižek trying to, like, get to?
Probably, unless he, like, is like, yeah, I'm done with Lacan now, fuck him. Which I doubt in this book about Lacan. But maybe, I mean, never know. I would say that as far as, like, psychoanalysis goes, I would be more willing to read Lacan or learn about Lacan than Freud.
Yes.
Just because he does seem a bit more rigorous, he does seem a bit more grounded, a bit more grounded. I don't know what his cocaine habit was like, whereas I know Freud had a cocaine habit. So, like, not to say that you can't do good work while on cocaine, but it definitely puts an asterisk next to everything you say and do.
For sure.
Yeah,
I agree. I think reading about Lacan and what, like, his take on Freud and how he would, I guess, move beyond Freud in a bit, like, in a sense, I think that would be very interesting to read. Because, like, to be frank, I think I kind of mentioned this last two or three times, you know, the last podcast or so, about Freud's stuff is, like, I can understand his contributions and they were good, but, like, they're still just, it's heavily fucking sexist. So it's just very, it's just kind of like, all right, Freud. It's like, okay, but there needs to be, like, another bullet point about, yeah, this shit was all kind of, like, debunked in a sense. So, and I guess maybe, I wonder if Lacan had a hand in debunking, right?
Yeah. I don't know. That would be interesting to find out. On that, though, asterisks involved. I think it was in this last chapter when Žižek was talking about... that's another thing we came to understand in this last chapter, or at least I came to understand properly, is loss and the gap.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he, the thing that really cemented it for me was the story of T.S. Eliot's, like, insane wife, and how T.S. Eliot was in love with this other woman. But as soon as his wife dies, he stops being in love with this other woman. And that was a really good explainer for, like, loss and, like, trying to, like, fill the gap with someone or something else that you are experiencing due to something in your life causing, like, chaos or what have you. However, at one point, Žižek unexaminedly, or maybe not unexamined, but, like, does not point out for the listener that when T.S. Eliot talks about his wife's insane Welsh shrieking, that T.S. Eliot was also a fascist.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you can't just be like, T.S. Eliot, like, loved this other woman because his wife was insane. And as soon as his insane wife dies, he stops loving this other woman, without also being like, T.S. Eliot was also a piece of shit, and he could have possibly driven his wife insane to begin with. And he was also a fascist, thus him being racist against another white person for being Welsh.
Yeah. And also, probably sexist. So, like,
oh, absolutely.
Him saying, oh, my shrieking wife, could really just mean, like, you have to take that with a huge grain of salt, right?
Be like, I am stuck in a sanitarium in 1940s. Like, this is not good. Why have you done this to me? And be like, fuck, my wife, she won't stop shrieking about being in a sanitarium. God damn. Anyway, this poem bangs, though.
Yeah, I mean, he also tried to, I think this was also the Mr. and Mrs. Smith about the, you know, just the, oh, or in another way, like, oh, trying to spice up your marriage. And it's like, oh, do you try different things or be pretend you're both hitmen or whatever, which is interesting. I think it's always interesting. Zizek always kind of wraps around to marriage in a lot of his examples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I like, because as we kind of said, sometimes the wording is a little sexist with like, oh, the ball and chain wife and like blah blah blah, and it's interesting.
Yeah. Now the question is whether these are things that he's presenting, or are these things that he is like are these his feelings, or is this like him discussing like psychoanalysis that was founded in a really sexist era?
Right.
I don't know. Given the fact that he's been married 4 times, I would imagine that he does not view his partner as ball and chain, because clearly he's unable. He has the key to said chain if there is a ball and chain.
Yeah.
And he's used it a lot.
He has, for sure. So, I know. Sometimes it is... with some of his writings, it's a little bit difficult to kind of parse out. Is he talking about Lacan? Is he talking about whomever? Is he talking about himself?
Mm-hmm.
Is he trying to... Sometimes I'm like, okay, I guess he's trying to explain the logic here with an example, you know, mm-hmm. movie example or whatever, mm-hmm. which at times can be clumsy because, as we said, we know who some of these films, or at some points I'm like, this was not explained as well as he thought. Just mm-hmm. based on like, the plot of the movie. And I'm like, or like this one scene from this movie that he kind of like throws out. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, man. Tell you though, he loves Hitchcock.
He fucking loves Hitchcock.
Holy shit. I wonder if he knows how much of an abuser Hitchcock was.
Yeah, I was just thinking that too. I'm like, Hitchcock was an asshole. So
yeah. She could be like, yes, but it is through the asshole that we receive the shit that we enjoy.
Yes. Auteurs are still bastards, though. Anyway.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You shouldn't hold them up.
Oh, yeah, no.
Okay. We have points of castration and fuck Hofstadter. And I've no comment, except talked about castration a lot, which makes sense from a Freud, Lacan's analysis of Freud and moms and dads.
Castration, I think, is... He does a decent job of pointing out that castration does not, like, quite literally mean that, like, only men and only their penis being cut off. It's right. Like, castration and really the unfortunate, like, relation with castration and the phallus. Like, castration is functionally the gap that like separates you from your function.
Right.
And he illustrates this really well with this like discussion of like, what does it mean to be a king?
Yes.
A king is like the functions and the robes. And as long as you're performing the functions and the robes, you're a king. When you are in your bedchambers and you're nude and no one is looking at you, are you a king? Not really. You're just another human being. And it's only when someone else is in your presence or enacting with you that your function as a king becomes apparent. And it's only while they believe that you are king that that function exists for you. So like there's a gap between you and your kinghood.
Yeah, and he also was trying to, this is also kind of going back to, like, the feminine and masculine of, like, women, like, when they're talking about women, it's usually like, oh, well, women aren't anything without men, and men can be a bunch of shit without women, like, there's
weird.
Like an asymmetry type of thing, or he was trying to say there's a more of a asymmetry instead of like a opposite type of thing.
Yeah, it's like women are defined as being not men, but then the not women is not men.
Yeah. And then
so, and which I guess does make space for like non-binary people. Absolutely. Right. But at the same time, like, why are women defined in the space as being not men? Like, and we could absolutely equally define men as being not women and like put women as the like forefront for this argument schema. So I think it more so stems from just the sexism of when all of this was developed.
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of interesting, but I think it was, I forgot what the guy he mentioned was like the anti-feminist, who was like, yeah, this is like his argument essentially. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. So, and then Judith Butler. So, I thought that was interesting, mm-hmm. but it was like just a section.
Yeah.
So didn't really dig too deep into that.
Yeah. And then like we then bounce back into using that sort of language for like most of the rest of the part.
So yeah.
Like, okay, well, I wish there was an asterisk on like every time you use like men and women to be like, and yes, please see this section. But
for sure.
I mean, there may have well been, because I didn't read the footnotes. But probably not.
I don't honestly recall a lot of footnotes in those sections, but then again, I didn't take notes, so don't know. Have to reread in 10 years.
Oh, that would be fun. 10-year anniversary of this podcast, we reread this?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Well, the first start, I guess, that is remembering when we started, which I think was 2019?
Yeah, it was 2019.
Okay, so summer 2029, listeners.
Yeah, so when Reese goes back in time from 2029 to save, protect Sarah Connor. Yep.
Yes. We will be right next to him as he goes back in time, but we're just going to be reading this book instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we will absolutely hit up the melancholy of Slavoj Žižek.
That's perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I really want an edit of that fucking series now, but with Slavoj Žižek in every scene instead of Harry.
Oh my god. And then like the Endless Eight and just random shit in the background or like slight changes.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, time to spend 6 months learning video editing so I can make this a reality. And by that, I mean play Elden Ring.
Hell yeah. Play more Elden Ring.
So I've encountered Hofstadter before.
Okay.
Have you?
I have not, actually.
Reading Hofstadter reminded me of this, but I also think that Žižek, and here's the part where you're going to be like, oh god, oh no, because Hofstadter is a book on our list.
Oh boy.
Žižek is clearer, and also his takedown of Hofstadter and his ways of like explaining the self are more succinct.
Okay.
So I am going to be taking Gödel, Escherenbach off of the book list.
Hooray, we did it. We took something off that we probably would have just also suffered painfully through.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll be pretty glad about that because in Gödel, Escherenbach, there are like homework questions at the end of every chapter.
Amazing.
And now we don't have to do that.
Don't have to do that.
Because Žižek, it literally exploded. Fucking I Am a Strange Loop and Gödel, Escherenbach in like, what was it? Let's find out. 36 pages. Destroyed that man in 36 pages.
How long is the book? Like the book
Gödel, we would Escherenbach?
Yeah.
2,000 pages.
Okay,
it's this length.
Damn.
Yeah. I'm not taking it off my shelf because it looks good.
Of course. Right. You gotta get the nice big books. Yeah. Like, you know, when you have all your Warhammer 40K notebooks. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just put like a different like sleeve around them so they look like Marcus Aurelius, Meditations on War 1. Marcus Aurelius, Meditations on War 2. But yeah, no, it's kind of frustrating in a way because my dad fucking loves Hofstadter. And it's like, Jimmy, you need to read I Am a Strange Loop. Jimmy, you need to read I Am a Strange Loop. Here, I'll give you I Am a Strange Loop. It's like, okay, didn't read I Am a Strange Loop. Try and read Go to Lesher and Bach. Get like a third of the way through it. Be like, yeah, I mean, I can see some of this. But then, like, I read this chapter. It's like, oh, wow. Like, you really did not account for, like, half of what the self is or could be. He's just like, yeah, you're just a recursion loop. Or you're you in the moment. It's like, but what about the other selves? And that's basically that.
Okay. So, good outcome of this so far. Besides us, you know, we've been seemingly very critical. We managed to get out of reading a book. So,
yeah.
Positives.
Yeah. Zizek saved us 2,000 pages.
Yeah, saved you guys also 2,000 pages of us being what the fuck is self loops self?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that as bad. It's so go to Lesher and Bach. Like, he'll do a chapter where he's like talking about like loops and the self, and then he'll do a chapter or section where he's re-explaining it through the lens of like a two character play.
Okay.
And then he recursively talks about all these things through then different lenses of like music theory and Bach and mathematics and Gödel and art and Escher.
Okay.
So it's not as bad as I described as like Zizek is tougher as far as like the terminology used. Hofstadter it's just a lot of like the same over and over, but through different lenses.
Gotcha.
Which probably would make it easier to read overall. But I mean, as these 36 pages have pointed out, he misses like two entire dimensions of the self. So is it worth it? No.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay. So our last point is we'll post these in the post or show notes is about two articles Zizek wrote earlier this month.
There's three articles.
Oh, three articles. I thought the third one
is basically the same as the second. Yeah.
Yeah. But All right. So three articles I wrote. One.
It's one plus one plus A articles.
Yes. One plus one plus A articles, which means three.
Yes.
About early in March. I said early this month, and I'm like, we're in April now, which I thought we were in April for like a week last week. Mm-hmm. It's been. Anyway, after Russia invades Ukraine. The first one is about like Putin's words and how he describes Ukraine and kind of a very like sexualized and like rapey metaphors.
Yeah.
And Zizek just plainly comes out. He's like, no, we need to castrate Russia. You know, once again, castration again. Which
and here it fits. Here it works.
Yeah. And also kind of the how the U.S. and Russia and to an extent China are both or all three are kind of doing the how can we reclaim our high school glory days of being like a country, right?
Yeah.
You know the U.S. trying to kind of push influence with NATO and Russia trying to just reclaim USSR, China just trying to get Taiwan. So yeah. Kind of the there's like the focus on like Putin's words and then also kind of like how these three powers are trying to navigate kind of, you know, the world as it is right now. Mm-hmm. What's funny was I think he's like, yeah, there's some leftists, which I wouldn't consider them, saying it's the West's fault for putting Russia in this corner and all this other shit. And I was like, okay, cool. Zizek just calling out folks, like, right here.
Yep. Like, as much as he is a picture of Stalin in his house, he is not a tanky.
No, he really criticizes fucking Stalin all throughout this goddamn book, too. He is not a fan. Anything else you want to discuss with this article or anything?
It's good. Like, it's his articles on Russia and Ukraine and the war are probably the best takes that I've read or seen. I do wish that, like, he would, like, more directly, like, talk about or address the fact that, like, we are arming Nazis. Like,
yeah,
as much as Ukraine has a right to self-determination and not to be aggressed upon, like, Azov Battalion are Nazis.
Yeah. He kind of mentions them. Actually, no, he doesn't. He mentions the other Russia's right wing, I forgot what the fuck they're called. Those fuckers. So, yeah, he probably should address that. That would have been nice.
Yep.
However, he does. You know what? Never mind. So, in the second article, sorry to like jump ahead.
Yeah, you're fine.
The second article about the what does defending Europe mean, and this kind of criticizes his own government and other governments' reception to Ukrainians, to the more welcome, more welcome reception to the Ukrainians versus the Afghans and other Syrians and other folks being pretty much turned away.
Yeah.
Another thing, though, I realize that he doesn't address the Ukrainian and Polish response to international students that are trying to leave. You know, Ukraine has been, there's been a lot of videos and other, like, condemnation about the racism at the border and the border guards going on. So there's also that. It's, like, this fucking war has been very interesting in terms of how the public perception of the Ukrainian president kind of went, because Zelensky was not a very popular guy. Ukraine has been kind of sort of pushing anti-LGBT legislation.
Oh, yeah.
So
not as strong as, say, Hungary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, that was kind of one of those, like, things where NATO was like, hey, before we, like, let you in, you're like, you need to kind of address this shit. And they're like, you know, just, that's Western stuff, and we kind of don't really like it. So it's a culture thing, which is like, okay, that's just bullshit, but all right.
Yeah.
You know, so...
I mean, this is the same, like, environment in which multiple fascist, like, paramilitary battalions exist. Like,
yeah.
So
it's like very, I would say, let me put it, it's obviously very messy, right? We're like, it is, I can't be like, I'm not going to blanket statement, yes, the Ukrainian people are just a bunch of racists and they deserve, like, I really do not care about the plight of them. Cause I've seen that take from some people and I'm just like, look, I know there's like racist people, but come the fuck on.
Yeah.
And then the, you know, Ukrainian, the like, full support of like, Ukraine as a country is like a beautiful country, blah 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 blah, and you know, like, nothing's ever been wrong with them or whatever. And then like, oh no, Russia totally deserves Ukraine, they're part of the US, like, they similar cultures and they should be part of like Russia and shit like that, you know. Or NATO's encroaching and Russia feels really threatened by that, so like, it's their fault that they blah blah, you know, all that other shit. It's just like, guys, it could just be, it's just really fucking messy. And
yeah,
it's probably a good idea to listen.
Not have a fucking take right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, really, it's, I understand from like a US perspective, I actually was surprised that we managed to fucking not be all fucking in right now. Like,
yet.
That's what I say right now. Yeah. We'll see, because it might fucking change in like probably the next day. Who fucking knows? But.
Mm-hmm.
It's been interesting to see how we've been kind of like, all right, we're not going to like run the fuck in right now. And I'm like, okay, so how long does this fucking last?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and then unfortunately, like, I do not know a whole lot about NATO and the involvement that they've been in. I do know a Serbian guy who, like, was in Serbia and had his, as he said, he's been in three different countries, even though he's been in the same house, you know, during, you know, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, like, all that bullshit. And he obviously has not a very great opinion of NATO, which is understandable because they bombed his shit. I mean,
No, it's, I guess we're going to have to read a book about Yugoslavia next.
Probably, yeah.
So we can better understand. This is, so I'm thinking, here's my pivot. We were a books podcast. We're now going to become a Slavoj Žižek podcast.
Okay.
So we now need to understand the material conditions that could produce a Slavoj Žižek.
Yes, there we go.
Okay, cool. But yeah, no, it's definitely not a time for takes. Though I will say the best take that I've heard is return Ukraine and Poland and pretty much all of Eastern Europe to the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth that had control of, like, one of the largest European land masses for like 250 plus years.
Interesting.
Yes. They also fell apart because of having too much democracy. Quite literally, they needed everyone who was a part of their legislature to vote either yes or no. And you could cause a complete deadlock by just showing up, refusing to vote, and then leaving.
Amazing.
Yes.
Holy shit. Ugh.
Yeah. Ooh. So there were literal decades where their legislature just could not pass any kind of legislation because people were doing that.
Ugh, that's rough.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. As troubling as it would be to, like, define, like, what is bad faith? There should be a bad faith law. Be like, hey, you're not legislating in good faith. So we're just going to ignore you. Cool. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. If you, all right, you don't want to participate, then okay. Like, you're just not going to, nothing's going to count for you, for or against you.
Yep. But that's something that, like, especially in the, like, Anglo-French American, like, redesign and, like, the post-USSR redesign of Europe and the world, that is not, like, accurately understood by most of the world. It's just how both in flux, but also, like, how, like, long different organizations of Eastern Europe, like, existed, and, like, just how complicated it is. Like, it's as much as people complain about, like, we went into the Middle East and we just drew a bunch of lines on a map and created, like, these separate countries that, like, separated and also grouped together, like, distinct peoples. Same thing with Africa. It's like, but we also did that in Eastern Europe.
Yes. And that, like, also happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And we did not allow people self-determination.
No.
But, like,
It's like, really, sometimes, you know, this, like, people of way, like, a bajillion removed from, like, Ireland, you know, will kind of be like, oh, yeah, you know, we've been, you know, what about the Irish slaves and, like, whatever. And it's like, yes, you're right. British colonial rule sucked ass, but, like, that's, but you're so removed from that. But yeah, it's, it's rough. That there, yeah, there was also imperialism within Europe, you know, for definitely Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, and I think, yeah, we just need to be kind of aware of our Western, and I would say, like, kind of our Western chauvinism that will definitely peek through at times.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, obviously, this whole thing really shouldn't have been a thing, but it is. It is what it is, and it just mm-hmm. the response has been very interesting, especially at the very beginning. Some people, leftist content creators, showed their asses about this, and that was fun, of just kind of like, maybe you shouldn't have said anything, and you want to be in trouble right now. Yeah. I know you need to be a reaction Andy to shit, but at the same time, it's like, maybe shut the fuck up.
Yeah. That actually brings up great podcast, Knowledge Fight. Most recent episodes have been going over the depositions that it's one guy whose name I can't remember, but is an editor for InfoWars, and Owen Schroyer.
Okay.
Were a part of recently. One of the things that the lawyer who's been grilling them in these depositions has been going over is your job, since you have stated you are a journalist, is your job to report news quickly or accurately? And they kept being like, well, both, but we're pressed to be quick. And it's like, okay, so you're trying to be quick. You're not trying to be accurate.
Right.
And with major events, and really with everything, the goal should be accuracy and as large of an image of the story as you can possibly provide. Because you can't provide a full image of a story, because a full image of a story doesn't exist. Because of just the sheer multitude of like views on any particular thing, and like places that you can look at it from. But you can provide as accurate and as full of a view of something as you can, and that requires spending time on it.
Yeah. Sometimes finding materials about certain countries and kind of the culture and stuff, it's some of that shit is not translated.
Yep.
Like, it sucks, and you kind of have to just really consider anything that is from that country probably isn't translated, or if it is in English, you have to really kind of look at the author and try to figure out what kind of their background is.
Exactly. How are they skewing this? Yeah. Good articles, though.
Yeah.
Pretty solid. Yeah.
After reading this book and then reading his articles, I'm like, now I can really get the really understand how Žižek writes. It's very fun, because I was thinking about, man, I think I read a Žižek article before, and I was like, what the fuck? And now I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I understand why he organizes things a certain way, because he does organize things that kind of, in a way, don't make sense or don't really flow, or they're very abruptly ended into the next point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, okay, and there was a jump here, and he's like, yes, but you will understand the jump.
Yeah.
Just come to understand me, and you will understand the jump.
Yes.
You can't hear it, listeners, and also Angela, but I'm doing hand waving over here.
Good. I love hand waving. All right. Is there anything else before we wrap up?
Everyone should listen to the last two episodes of Knowledge Fight. They're real good. It's only 6 hours of your life, but it's real good.
There you go. We'll be reading part 4. For April, and we'll do the next list of books. I promise May's book will probably just be a fiction book. Don't you worry, we need a break. Everyone
Holy
needs a break.
Shit, we need a break. Might need a 2-month break.
But yeah, we might do 2 fiction books. We'll see we'll figure out how that really goes.
Maybe a fiction book, and then maybe a really straightforward, I don't know, a history. A fucking China Melville's October Revolution.
Yeah. Something a little bit narrative, but still historical. You can kind of easily follow.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. All right. Well, with that, remember,
books are good.
Actually.